Many bestsellers are surprise hits, appearing almost out of nowhere to dominate and saturate. The latest blockbuster, though, was a guaranteed smash from the day this past February when its publisher announced the title. Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. Go Set a Watchman is only the second novel from author Harper Lee. Its predecessor, To Kill a Mockingbird, has sold more than 150 million copies worldwide since 1960. Both books share characters and settings, even if the portrayals diverge dramatically. Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly senior writer, joins me from New York with word on the book's reception by readers and critics. And welcome back to Beyond the Book, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So, you know, it's typical of summer that it's a sleepy time for the publishing industry, but not this year. We're off to a pretty hot start, and of course, I don't mean temperatures there in Manhattan. So let's start with the obvious headline. Harper Lee's Go Set a Watchman gets off to a record start.
Yeah, hot indeed for Harper Lee, although I think it's been both hot and a little bit lukewarm. On the sales side, without question, it's been hot, and we'll have more on that in Monday's issue of PW, and of course, you can read all of our coverage on the PW website. But as we reported today, Barnes & Noble and Books A Million have both pronounced that Go Set a Watchman has had the largest first-day sale of any adult fiction book in the history of both retailers. The book also knocked E.L. James Gray off the top of the BNN bestseller list, and the company expressed that Watchmen is going to be its biggest seller of the year. Books A Million's Terry Finley said Watchmen sales were beyond their most optimistic projections, and while Amazon couldn't provide new sales figures, or we should say wouldn't provide sales figures, a spokesman repeatedly said the company's earlier announcement that Watchmen was going to be the most pre-ordered book since 2007's release of J.K. Rowling's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. HarperCollins declined to say exactly how many copies it sold, but it's a lot. And in the UK, we know that Watchmen has sold 105,000 copies on its first day alone. So worldwide, a pretty hot start to the summer for Harper Lee.
Well, indeed, impressive numbers. So that's where all the heat is coming from, Andrew. What's the lukewarm?
Well, the critical reception really has been pretty mixed. And, you know, for many, there was the shock of this book, of learning that Atticus Finch, he's the iconic character in To Kill a Mockingbird, is in fact a racist. You know, I really don't find that shocking at all. But, you know, per the publisher's admission, the book was not edited. And it does really kind of read, as our review notes, like a draft. And many critics have noted that as well. And, you know, many stories have also raised issues about the book's questionable publication, whether or not Harper Lee was competent to sign this contract, etc. But none of that, of course, seems to have affected sales. And none of that really matters to HarperCollins, certainly not to their bottom line. The book is selling heavily. And frankly, I'm prepared to wait and see how this book actually settles in critically over the next few years. So hot sales, and we'll wait and see what the critical reception ultimately winds up being.
All right. I think the conversation will continue for some time to come, even if the sales begin to taper off. But on to the next hot issue. This week, the Authors Guild made headlines with two big announcements. And let's talk about the first, a missive from the Authors Guild on author ebook royalties.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the day that we went live with our podcast last week, the Authors Guild sent over its first detailed analysis of its Fair Contract Initiative. You may recall we talked a bit about that in the past. That's an outreach effort aimed at improving the standard contract for authors. And in that missive last week, it blasted the inadequate ebook royalties and argued that the digital royalty favors publishers far too heavily. Now, a few things about this. You can read it on, all about it on the PW site, of course. But I think this is exactly what the Authors Guild should have been doing all along, and I applaud them for doing it now. They call the standard ebook royalty rate of 25% unfair, and they urge their members to push back on it. But I can't help but hear this news from the Authors Guild and think that they may be a dollar short and a day late. Many days late and many dollars short, actually. And the fact is, this issue should have concerned them from day one. Instead, they spent the formative years in the ebook game fighting Google over their scanning of out-of-print library books, and that fight is still actually ongoing. And in that time, the 25% ebook royalty has pretty much become de facto. And what's also interesting is that the Authors Guild acknowledges that some publishers have given authors a 50% ebook royalty rate, and I'm sure that includes Guild members, but those authors are bound by non-disclosure agreements. To me, that is a striking admission, and sort of hints at the lack of leadership by the Authors Guild on this issue, because, you know, of those members who actually were able to get theirs, as you might say, the fact that they would do so confidentially rather than lend their muscle to their fellow authors, I think is pretty telling. So I applaud the Authors Guild for the Fair Contract Initiative, and I'm all for them getting in the game and trying to push the ebook royalty rate up to a more equitable level. But I do question all these years later how effective they're going to be with that.
Well, another question would be how effective they would be in asking Congress to do anything, let alone to change copyright laws. But indeed, that's what the Authors Guild has done. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so this one I'm a little less supportive of than the 25% ebook royalty rate, though I do understand what's driving it. Citing an uptick in internet piracy, the Authors Guild has written Congress asking them to require internet service providers to monitor and filter their networks for pirated works. Specifically, Guild officials want to replace the current notice and takedown regime authorized by the Digital Millennium Copyright Act and replace it with a notice and stay down provision. Under the Guild's proposal, ISPs who do not take reasonable measures to keep all infringing copies off their networks would lose their safe harbor immunity from claims of copyright infringement. Now, as our listeners almost certainly know, the DMCA safe harbor provision shields internet service providers from liability for the infringing behavior of its users. But the Guild calls that regime ineffective because it's like whack-a-mole. You're constantly trying to keep pirated works off the internet. And sure, I get that. That's tough. But determining copyright ownership is also complex. And, you know, there's fair use, for example. And just because a work is unlicensed doesn't necessarily mean that it is unauthorized. The fact is, there really is no easy way to filter networks without impinging on the rights of the public and on people's copyrights. And, you know, I'm a little bothered that a group that's so dependent on free speech could be so cavalier in proposing this sort of amendment to copyright law. But I do understand where it comes from. And I think what it boils down to for me is that this proposal really is going nowhere, too, because the ISPs are surely going to oppose it, as will libraries and free speech advocates. And, of course, we're talking about Congress here, and they hate just about everything.
Yeah, well, it seems that way, certainly this summer. But when it comes to fair use, you're right, it is such a interesting and developing part of the copyright law. Indeed, we have a podcast coming up on Monday with NYU School of Law Professor Chris Sprigman, taking a look at the recent brouhaha over the Richard Prince re-photographs, and that should be something of interest to our listeners. But in another area where complex copyright determinations are at stake, this week briefs were filed in the Georgia State e-reserves case.
Yes, another case that's still dragging on after all these years. So briefs, these are the latest moves in the long-running GSU e-reserves case, and it comes after the Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit reversed Judge Arinda Evans' 2012 verdict against the publishers and remanded the case to her for further analysis. And with these briefs, we now get a step closer to a new decision, although we don't know how long that path is actually going to be, and it's unclear whether this verdict is actually going to be significantly different in its effect. But I can say this, not surprisingly, the two sides offer very, very strikingly different interpretations of what the 11th Circuit actually said in its reversal. In their brief, on one hand, the publishers argue that the appeals court decision directs Judge Evans to be primarily concerned with the effect of Georgia State's copying on the publishers, specifically on their incentive to publish. The publishers argue that such unlicensed digital copies pose a severe threat of market substitution and that the financial threat to publishers clearly outweighs any nonprofit educational use, and that's the way the 11th Circuit would have her look at this case. Georgia State attorneys, on the other hand, say that the publishers are misrepresenting the appeals court decision, and they argue that the 11th Circuit and the Supreme Court as well puts nonprofit educational use at least on an equal footing with transformative use. In other words, copies for teaching are permitted, and the small hit that the publishers take is far outweighed by the benefits offered through this educational purpose. Now, you can read all about this on the PW site. I've written a detailed look at both briefs. But I have to say, at this point, it's hard for me to see the end of this case in sight. In reading both briefs, I already can see the seeds of the next appeal sown of Judge Arinda Evans's next verdict, that is. And barring a settlement, it looks to me like we're looking at many, many more months, if not years, of litigation. And meanwhile, the market is already solving most of these issues that are at stake as we move more and more towards digital resources. You know, at some point, I think both sides here just need to declare victory and end this case.
Well, you know, we're going to end the show here with some talk of Amazon. It wouldn't be a discussion with Andrew Albanese if the e-retailer didn't come up. And this week, Authors United has surfaced again with a plea for the Department of Justice to investigate Amazon. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, and you can read all about that on the PW site as well. But my reaction is, you know, what the? I mean, I can't say it is on your show, I don't think, anyway, but you get the point. You know, I certainly sympathize with the fears that many of us hold about Amazon, especially in many authors. And I agree that Amazon needs a counterbalance in the market. But, you know, I can barely count the ways that this campaign, which was also assisted by the Authors Guild, doesn't come off as just almost laughable. You know, and we can start with the New York Times piece on this and Doug Preston having his picture taken standing by his writing cabin in the woods. And the timing of this all, I mean, this is Amazon Prime Day, right? With the week that it came out. And I don't know if that was by design or not, but I'm not sure that that was advantageous timing to have this come out now. And then there was the letter itself by Authors United, which really sort of pitched their argument to the Department of Justice as an issue of culture. But, you know, you might want to be careful about making a cultural access argument to the Department of Justice the same week that your allies in this, the Authors Guild, is asking Congress to start filtering the internet. You know, the bottom line here is that the DOJ really doesn't care that much about culture. It cares about markets. And even though Amazon has built up a really big market share and is throwing its weight around with ways that make a lot of us uneasy, I don't understand, and the Authors United letter doesn't make the point to me as to why this is a problem the market can't solve. The Authors United letter to me reads like, hey, don't let this monopolist Amazon come in and disrupt the cartel we now enjoy. You know, Amazon has a 40% share of book sales, they write. Well, five houses own 90% of the bestseller list right now, and there's really just one retail chain left. So this takes me back to Miami, the Miami Book Fair, and the topic that we discussed on your excellent panel there, which I really enjoyed. And just a day before we sat on that panel, the people from Authors United, including two panelists that were on our panel, which Franklin Foer from the New Republic and Oren Teicher from ABA, actually went to Washington and met with DOJ officials. And they got shut down pretty quickly. But what I really don't get here is why anybody is looking to get the DOJ back involved with the book business here. It's almost like they did not enjoy their last foray by the DOJ into publishing enough. And to me, I would just say at this point, we have new deals between Amazon and the publishers. Let's just take a pause here. Let's take a deep breath and try to reflect a little bit on the lessons of the last few years in the book market before we start getting the DOJ and the lawyers involved again.
Well, plenty to reflect on there from Andrew Albanese, senior writer at Publishers Weekly, who joins us every Friday with the latest news from the book world. Thanks for joining us, Andrew.
My pleasure, as always.
Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center, a global rights broker for the world's most sought-after materials, including millions of books and ebooks, journals, newspapers, magazines, and blogs, as well as images, movies, and television shows. You can follow Beyond the Book on Twitter, find us on Facebook, and subscribe to the free podcast series on iTunes or at our website, beyondthebook.com. My name is Christopher Keneally. For all of us at Copyright Clearance Center, thanks for listening to Beyond the Book.